Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Despite what their moms told them, they just aren't talented enough for radio. Unfortunately, anyone can have a show these days. Sean.
Well, I'm pretty hard to figure out sometimes. In fact, I can't even figure myself out sometimes, so don't you try to.
Joe.
You're an idiot. Really a disloyal person.
This is the Cuse Militia. Now, those two unapologetically biased orange-blooded homers, Sean and Joe.
It's the most bullshit thing I've seen in 30 years.
Welcome, orange men and ladies. Happy Thursday. This is the Cuse Militia with Sean and Joe at Cuse Militia on the socials. Go there, join the militia, the crisp crack of Joe's beer is sweet music to my ears. I hope it's sweet music to your ears. It's been quite some time. We've come out of the hole after the loss to Houston and an absolute ton of Syracuse basketball news. And we are already behind on the Syracuse football news somewhat. Joe's going to give us a little update with that. We're going to have Mike McAllister on to tie up some of the loose ends for Syracuse basketball and a really unprecedented, end to the season for college basketball. The transfer portal is coming out of everybody's ears. It seems like every day, because I think it was every day, that something moved within the program. So a ton to talk about there.
Yeah.
Right? And when you think about doing a show and you're like, well, let's do a show. Okay, well, should we wait another day? Okay, let's wait a day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's where we were, right? Because we did so many episodes for like the past, 2-3 weeks or whatever leading up to this. So we're like, we're going to take a break. We're going to see, you know, let the news fall. I don't think we had any idea that it was going to come out like that. And then it was kind of like every day we were like questioning, should we do it? There might be something else. Should we do it? Let's just wait, right? So
yeah, we booked Mike McAllister today and I'm like, well, maybe something new will happen today. Maybe it'll be tomorrow and I'll be like, damn it. Maybe we should have waited a day. But it's okay because we're going to speculate, we're going to speculate on what's left with some buy-seller holds. We are going to do our best to get through all of this basketball stuff the best we can. And then maybe if there's time left, we are going to get his thoughts on some of the football stuff going on. But until then, Joe, a big one today. And by big, I mean big and big in size. Literally and figuratively. Big. So
335, right?
6'7", 335. Yeah, that's pretty damn big. So Willie Tyler from Texas. I guess he never even really played a snap with Texas.
No.
It's kind of crazy. He's got three years of eligibility left, right?
Yep.
Okay. Go. So update. Give us your football update, bro.
Enlighten us. Obviously some stuff, right? I mean, there was the pro day stuff with Cisco and Trill and Malfawanu and stuff, and I think they all kind of help themselves out. There's some high grades on some of those guys, so I wouldn't be surprised if all three of them got drafted come NFL draft, which is something that we really haven't seen recently. Unless you're a punter, you really don't get drafted. But other than that, they started spring practice and quarterback David Summers, he entered the transfer portal, and like you said, we got this commit today, Willie Tyler from Texas. So
transfer,
another big body, and we're getting everybody back from last year. And on top of the recruiting class, I mean, Babers is going all in. I mean, obviously we spoke ad nauseum for the past 2 years, I think, about the offensive line and how I think he wants to just shore that up and kind of see really where it is, right? Deficiencies. I mean, we brought in another transfer that's a quarterback that's going to be able to, I think, create some sort of a quarterback controversy. But I think that he's addressing certain issues that I think all fans and everybody knew kind of what were the issues were. So until you can fix the offensive line, you really can't figure out what it really was, right? Well, chicken or the egg type situation. So we're going all in, obviously. I think we got, like 6 or 7 offensive linemen coming in, obviously, with him and everybody coming back. So it's good news with that depth, because with all those guys, there's no way you're not going to be able to figure out a pretty good combination for what you're trying to do on offense.
In the running backs, a lot of running backs coming back. It's going to be the football season is going to be interesting. I've got to be honest, and it's always tough for me to make the switch from basketball to football, because football really happens starts to move really shortly after basketball ends, but I mean, we got all summer. It just never really football just never stops. I mean, let's be honest. No, I mean, the Virginia Beach high schools around here, my son's playing lacrosse. They're doing all of their conditioning and everything too. On the opposite end of the field. So it's everywhere. And that's just how it is, which is great. It's just, it's a lot of work. it's a lot of work. So, all right, we want to get Mike on here, but first we got to hear from the folks over at betonline.ag. BetOnline is the title sponsor for sports drink. Easy for me to say, sports drink, formerly Armchair. It's that time of year again, and all eyes are on pro basketball and the start of the Major League Baseball season. BetOnline.ag has all of the betting action in the NBA. The conference races are heating up as teams prepare to make their run for the playoffs. And if baseball is your first love, BetOnline has you covered. If you like hockey, golf, MMA, and championship boxing, BetOnline has it all. Every sport, every game, every matchup. BetOnline has you covered for all the odds and real-time updates and is the place to be for all your sports betting needs. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to place your bet and check in on all your favorite sports bets all the time. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and go to betonline.ag to sign up. Go there. Start an account. It doesn't take much. Throw a 50 banger on it. Get you started. BetOnline.ag. Okay. You guys maybe have heard us on the Locker Room app. Listen, this is an app where it's going to allow us to talk with you. It's an audio-only app. And I hook it up to the mixer here. And you can hear us live through the Locker Room app. You can request to talk and get on immediately. Or you can just sit there and listen to us live. All you got to do is go to any of the Google Play, iOS, Apple Store, download the app, Locker Room app. It's a sock. The icon is a sock, in case you're wondering. Go there. All you got to do is set up an account, and you can follow us. Maybe we'll follow you back. And here's the other thing. You don't have to just listen to us. You can use this thing for any kind of debates you want. You can use it for your own post or pregame stuff. You can make your own halftime show. You can do whatever you want. You don't have to just listen. You as well can broadcast live and have people comment and call in and listen to you and have conversation. So anyways, go there, check it out. It's free. It's audio only, as I mentioned, a social media platform for sports fans. And as I said, join the conversations with us. We will always let you know when we'll be going and doing a Locker Room live. And this is something I've mentioned we want to get into. Well, now they're sponsoring the show. So now I have to do it. I'm kind of feel pressured to. So Locker Room, go there, download it. Appreciate it. Locker Room. Thank you. Joining us now, publisher of all things Syracuse for Syracuse Sports Illustrated. If there's a move to be made, he'll let you know. He'll let us all know. At McAllisterMike1 on Twitter. Long overdue, Mike. Thanks for joining us. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, first, before we get into everything, all things Syracuse basketball, you've been working your fingers to the bone over there. From the computer, and you've been doing a fantastic job. We use your stuff all the time, and we really appreciate it. The move from 247 to Sports Illustrated for you seems to be working out. You're a Syracuse kid, right?
Yeah, I was born and raised in the area. I went to Marcellus High School, went to college out in Rochester, so I'm a upstate New York guy my entire life.
Okay.
That's awesome. Okay. Joe and I, we grew up in the, you know, East Syracuse and went to ESM, both graduated from ESM. So anyways, yeah. It's always the local boys. I like that.
Yes.
Let's start with Kamari Lance. Okay. 6'8", five star. I read, you know, he's got what? 19th best player on ESPN, 33rd and 247 and 62nd on Rivals. You quoted him in your piece as saying, I'm a 6'8" wing. I can play make, I can score, I can play defense. I can do whatever you want me to do. I want to win. I'll definitely bring the swag and scoring and playmaking. Definitely my length and IQ for the game in the zone. Can get out and make steals. I definitely think I can impact the zone well. This kid's a Syracuse fan. His older brother was a Melo fan. He became a fan too. This seems like almost too good to be true, this kid.
It does. And it's funny, when you have a kid that grows up in Indiana, you almost expect him by default as a basketball guy to be an Indiana fan, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that he grew up a Syracuse fan, it's interesting. It's different than what you'd expect. You'd expect that from the kid that grows up in Albany or Samir Torrance, who's transferring in, who grew up in the area. You expect that. Even some kids, you know, if you're in Pennsylvania, whatever, Pittsburgh and Penn State basketball, maybe they're not on your radar. Syracuse is a little bit more. You can sort of understand some of that. Indiana was – that really wasn't what I was expecting when he told me that. And, you know, so his older brother grew up a huge fan of Melo. That was his favorite player. And so when he grew up watching college basketball, he was watching it with his brother, who was watching Syracuse and rooting for Syracuse. So that sort of fostered, you know, his love for SU. And the fact that he then turns into an elite player, you know, helps you. But yeah, he said wing to me. He said guard other places. And some people were fixated on him saying guard. The thing to remember is the three at Syracuse, the small forward spot, does a lot of things that guards typically do, right? You put the ball in their hands, you let them facilitate the offense, they take guys off the dribble, they play make for other players. We've seen Syracuse have players that have done those things very successfully in this system. That's what he is. Whether he plays at the two or plays at the three, he's going to be doing guard-like things offensively, and he's long enough that he can be disruptive on the defensive end in either spot. So the fact that this guy is extremely talented, he's a very confident offensive player. He's got range out to the 3-point line, an elite talent, as you can tell by how highly ranked he is. Although I think Rivals needs to kind of get in line with where everyone else. You know, still it tells you how good of a player this is. And it's a great way to get the 22 class started for Syracuse.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, Mike, because when I first watched his tape before I saw his measurables, and he looked like a three-level scorer. I thought he was a 6'4", 6'5", Malachi Richardson-type guard, right? And then I saw his measurables, and I saw 6'8". I said, wow, this guy could be something special. And the way he hit those threes, and, like, again, three-level scorer, he's definitely – you think he has something to do with Woody Newton leaving?
Maybe.
Or you think Benny?
I think it was the combination of Benny, Cole Swider, and then, you know, the, we'll say, likelihood, wink wink, that Jimmy Boeheim Jr. is going to come as well. You know, the fact that they're adding those three forwards in addition to, you know, some potentially Quincy still being there, et cetera.
Right.
I think Woody kind of saw, I'm not going to play that much next year, regardless of what Quincy and Allen decide. And if those guys come back, then I'm definitely not playing. And, you know, you've got Benny potentially there for multiple years. You've got Cole, who I think we all expect will probably be there for 2 years, barring some sort of monster season that exceeds even our expectations, which if he has a type of season where he can bolt to the NBA, then Syracuse is tremendous next year.
Yeah.
You know, so I think you kind of saw the writing on the wall. I don't know that this directly had an impact on it, although it could have played a small part. I think Cole Swider was probably the bigger factor there, so why he decided to leave.
Okay.
So just to, like, recap, you know, when you look back on the Syracuse season and Sidibe gets injured 4 minutes into it and they make the Sweet 16, just a tremendous job of overcoming adversity and watching this team just get better and better slowly and slowly. Had a couple of hiccups, the COVID pauses and everything. But what can you say about just what Coach did And after all, like, Coach, I mean, more criticism this year than in recent memory. Now, he gets hosed all the time by the fans. But this year was totally different. Totally different. And they go and make the Sweet 16.
Yes, and here's the thing, right? So you've got a head coach who's been here for 45 years. My entire life, there's only been one head coach of Syracuse
basketball. Yeah, me too. I'm 42, so.
As I'm getting older, that becomes more and more astonishing, the fact that that's still true.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's amazing to me that you've got a guy who's been here as long as he has. He's never had a losing season. Mm-hmm. He's been to 5-6 Final Fours, whatever it is, has a national title. He's basically averaging going to the Final Four every 8 years and going to the Sweet 16 every 2 to 3 years, whatever it is. So that's a tremendous amount of success. And he is essentially an Orinze Onowaku injury and a Derek Coleman missed free throw away from having two titles.
Yeah.
And that doesn't change how good of a coach he is. The fact that Coleman missed a free throw or Onowaku got hurt. Right.
So you're talking about a guy. Mellow paper.
Well, the 2010
that's a whole separate podcast. That's a whole separate episode.
Yeah,
but the fact that he's accomplished all of that, and still in recent years, despite the fact that they've had, you could say, subpar regular seasons by his own standards that he helped create, they've still had tournament runs. You know, you look at the last 8 years; they've had two Final Fours, four Sweet 16s, a couple of Elite Eights. All of that during sanctions when you're having double-digit loss seasons as well. He's 9-3 as a double-digit seed in the NCAA tournament. That's insane. That tells you a couple of things. One, his coaching ability shouldn't be questioned. Okay, he can coach. Regardless of what players he has on the roster, what type of a team he has, he's done it with so many different types of teams. He can out-coach the opposing coach, even when he has less talent. And he proves that every year. But I think at some point, and that this does not mean that criticism can never happen, right? Everyone can be criticized, and there are certainly things that you can criticize Boeheim on. But largely, when it comes to who he's playing and who he's not, we don't have all of the information, right? We don't see practices. So if Jesse Edwards had been playing all along, they'd have, you know, five fewer losses or whatever it is, and they would have been a much higher seed and et cetera. The only thing I've said to that is, while that's potentially possible, we'll never know, it's also possible that the Hall of Fame head coach has been doing this for 45 years, brought Jesse along, only put him out there in situations where he could be successful, and the fact that he did play well and it came together down the stretch of the season proves that the way that he handled it during the regular season was correct. Not the opposite. I've simply argued we have to at least leave room for that possibility. Even if you still ultimately don't agree, you have to acknowledge that there's a possibility that's the case. So I think the criticism at times was over the line, a little bit extreme for my taste. But, you know, I would say, the downside to having a very large and passionate fan base is you get some of that. People are emotional. They don't like to lose, all of those things. At the end of the day, everyone just wants Syracuse to win, right? That's even the ones that are criticizing for the most part.
And the negative stuff's always going to get the most attention, right?
It is. It is. Yeah. And I think there's a much larger percentage of the fan base that isn't criticizing, you know, maybe wonders some things. I don't understand why Jesse isn't playing more. I think that's a fair question to ask. I think at times when that question is asked of Boeheim, he takes that as a personal attack on how he's coaching, when it's really people just want to know. They're asking him the question so he can tell them. Mm-hmm. Well, he's not ready yet because they want his insight because he knows so much about basketball. So, you know, there's some give and take there. But again, the end results speak for themselves, and then recruiting starting to pick up. So it's really hard to complain too much.
Absolutely. Well said. So on the guys that are leaving, okay, so we obviously saw you had a piece out, and you had a couple of the same ones we had. We actually talked about it, I think, the day before or that day that the piece came out. And the one guy I really didn't see moving, and look, the listeners to this show told us it was going to happen, and we kind of poo-pooed it. So I have egg on my face about that, okay? And I'm not an expert, all right? I make educated guesses most of the time. That would be Kadari Richmond leaving. I really didn't see it coming, man. I mean, because I understand where he's coming from. He came exactly from where the fans came from, by the way.
Yes.
The listeners to this show. So, I mean, did that catch you off guard at all? Did you expect that? Did you think maybe it was going to happen? Because I really didn't think, and I don't know about you, Joe, I didn't really think there was that high of a likelihood he was going to be going.
I had heard during the season there were some rumblings about him potentially not being happy and potentially wanting to move on. But I ultimately thought I've heard that about different players throughout Boeheim's career since I've been following, right? You hear about players potentially not being happy and wanting to leave. Michael Carter Williams, you heard about that. Jalen Carey, even though he ended up leaving the next offseason, there was one offseason where everyone thought he was going to. Mm-hmm. And then he had, you know, his exit meeting at the end of the season with Coach Boeheim and stuck around for another year. And that's kind of what I thought was going to happen, even when I heard some of those rumblings during the season, is that he was going to sit down with Coach Boeheim during the exit meeting. And it was basically going to be explained to him, listen, you were a true freshman playing over 20 minutes a game. We had several games where you played 30 minutes in those games when Joe wasn't playing well. And, you know, we think very highly of your potential. We think you're a great fit for what we do. And we think you're going to be a great player here. You will have an opportunity to compete for the starting job next year. And if you are better than Joe, you will get the job. And that he would say, okay, I'm good. I'm here. I know everything that goes on here. I've been successful here. I'm going to work my butt off in the off season, and I'm going to make Coach start me over Joe. That's mm-hmm. what I thought was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, for some reason, it seems he interpreted that exit meeting as, well, I got no chance to start, so I better go. I don't know whether that was a miscommunication on Coach's part. He says it wasn't. We don't know because we weren't involved in those meetings, in those discussions. But yeah, it caught me a little bit off guard, and it's one of those where you hope it's not a decision that comes back to bite him in terms of his career. Cause even though he's not at Syracuse, right. You know, he's a good kid by all accounts, from everything I've heard. You just hope that he still ends up being successful at Seton Hall and that he realizes some of those dreams and becomes, you know, a professional player and is able to do some of those things.
Oh yeah. Too, Mike, I was right there on the same level with you as far as like, yeah, you have to let him know that if you just, you know, take that step, that you have a chance to compete, and that you, because you have to know, everybody knows, if Kadari takes that one step, his outside jumper, everything like that gets a little bit better, and he gets his knee right because he was, you know, a little bit injured at the end of the year, that there's no doubt that he comes back better than Joe, I think, and he should have been able to start, in my opinion. And like you said, I don't know what was said, but at some point he interpreted that as that he didn't think he was going to be able to start. And, that's unfortunate. I mean, I'm going to cheer for him wherever he goes, but I'm right there with you. It's exactly what you thought is exactly what I thought was going to happen. He's going to come back and prove that he was the better fit for the system.
Yeah. And I think it's important too, to take a look when you look at the Joe versus Kadari thing. I think it's important to look at it from the other side rather than just Kadari's, in that we know that Joe had COVID, and when he was getting over COVID, he seemed to really struggle for quite a while, looked lethargic at times, just didn't have the same level of energy that he does. I think he missed playing in front of a crowd more than just about anyone else on the team.
Yep.
I think that was a factor in some of his sloppy play at times. And he played better in the NCAA tournament.
Did.
But the other thing that you have to remember is, look at it from the coach's perspective, right? He said all season he needs all three guards to play well for them to be a good team. That includes Joe. Even if you play Kadari more minutes, you still need Joe to be productive when he's on the floor. If you mid-season, right after he has COVID and goes through essentially his first prolonged slump of his college career, because he was pretty solid as a freshman. Maybe not, you know, this great elite all-time player, but he was a solid point.
Exceeded expectations.
I think so. Yeah. For a true freshman. Yep. And
well,
now,
just for the record, Joe thought he was going to redshirt, and he didn't. So
he got hoisted into that spot, and he exceeded my expectations. That's why I said that.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think anyone expected him to be kind of that steady right away. But now he goes through a slump after getting COVID during a pandemic year. And if you suddenly bench him and you're playing Kadari 35 minutes a game, you've lost Joe. You've killed his confidence. You're not getting him back. Now, does that mean that you sacrifice your team's success in order to coddle one player necessarily? No, but I would also argue that Boeheim didn't coddle him. There were several games where Joe played terrible game and Kadari played 30 plus minutes in those games, yep. and Joe sat for extended periods in the second halves of games. So I think this was, as much as people want to make it about Kadari, I think that the other side of it is you had a head coach who stuck by his struggling sophomore point guard and did what he could to not destroy his confidence and lose him mentally for not only this year, but going forward.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that too. And I think it's a solid point. You know, I think the off season coming into next year could have been maybe a different story. Obviously, we all saw the games. We, like you said earlier, Mike, and we've said here on this show numerous times throughout the year during this whole controversy, is that we don't see what's going on in practices. If coach tells me Joe's nailing everything in practice, I got to believe Joe's nailing everything in practice. What am I going to, who am I to argue with them? So, right?
Nope. Coach.
So, you know, okay. So Braswell was another one that Joe kind of expected Braswell, right, Joe? You didn't expect Woody though, but Bull, I mean, I think Bull seen the writing on the wall that maybe we didn't until a couple days after, which was Sidibe coming back. So obviously those ones, not a big deal. Now, the fan favorite, though, Mark, I mean, obviously there was, in my heart, I wanted him to come back because I just enjoy watching him play. But as far as the team goes, you know, he's going to go do his thing. He's going to go make money. More power to him. He was thrusted into some very bad spots for just about 2 years. You know, and he did a fantastic job, but, you know, it was hard to watch at times, you know, with the foul trouble and all that stuff. So he goes, he did like drastically improve. You noted this, his free throw shooting from 59% in his sophomore year to 85% this year, which did that lead the team 85? Or was it Buddy?
I think Buddy was slightly higher than that.
Yeah.
I
okay.
Think Buddy was really higher.
I think so too, but still, you knew when he went to the line. Whereas a couple years ago, you were like, "Oh, geez, they fouled Mark." You know, you know.
I mean, his development over 4 years and the type of player he became, and the fact he did that at 200 pounds soaking wet, playing against 250 pound guys every single game. I mean, I don't know that there's a better glue guy in Syracuse basketball history than Marek Dolajai. He played on two Sweet 16 teams, double-digit losses, I think, every year that he was there, gave you everything that he had every single night, stood in front of a charging Zion Williams.
Yeah.
Williamson. That was a tremendous play. His teeth against Georgetown and stayed in the game. I mean, the guy was everything that you could want in a basketball player. And you know what? Syracuse fans should want him to come back because he was fun to watch. He's what's great about college basketball when you see everything that he gives you every single night, regardless of whether you're playing him at the 3, the 4, the 5, you know, tell him to go play point guard. He'll go play. He doesn't, you know, whatever. Yeah. He just wants to go play and then wants to go eat pizza. That's what he wants to do.
Yep. And so he was like the Eric Dungy of Orange basketball.
That's a good comparison. Everyone loved him. You know, as much as some of those teams with the Dungy was on got criticism, Dungy rarely did. It wasn't his fault. He was a fan favorite. Mm-hmm. Dolajai, same thing. He was a fan favorite. He'll always be a fan favorite. You know, selfishly, it's unfortunate he's not coming back because I liked watching him, covering him, listening to him talk about how much he loves pizza, everything else. But you know, he'll have a very good professional career in Europe somewhere, and he'll make himself a lot of money and. You know, hopefully he doesn't have to play center anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
exactly
what I was saying. I was like, he's lost professional years playing at Syracuse, taking these charges down at center. Like, let him go make the money that he can make in this short amount of time that he has to make it. Because he is taking a beating. I'd love to see him back, but let him go make that money.
We always said that a game wasn't official until Mark hit the wood. Once Mark hit the ground, that was it. The game was official. It was going in the books. I mean, so just an absolute pleasure to watch. A great kid, and he'll go. My kids love him. He's going to go down to history. He's going to be one of those ones we always remember.
Yeah, he will not be forgotten.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. So, okay, at Turf on Fire on Twitter. By the way, the buy, sell, or hold rules are this. I don't even know how many I have. I have a bunch. I'm just going to – we'll just see how many we can get to. You are permitted only one hold per episode, so to speak, show. So you can hold. You can only hold once, okay? So with that said, at Turf on Fire on Twitter, he says, buy, sell, or hold, Quincy and Griffin will play for the Orange next year. Now, you can do these separately. You can do these separately.
I was going to say, is this a package thing? So it's either they both come or they both stay?
Nope, you could do it. He put them together, but I'm just, you could do it separately. That's fine. I would love to hear your thoughts on this.
I'm going to sell Alan Griffin coming back.
Okay.
I don't think he is. I think he's looking for any possible opportunity not to. He just kind of got the impression he wasn't a big fan of the zone. It just didn't seem to click with him. We saw the way that went down with his playing time at the end of the season. Now, I do think he's a talented player, and if he did end up coming back, you know, Syracuse is better. It's more depth, et cetera. But Syracuse has a lot more options now than they did last year at the forward spot with Benny, with Cole Swider, et cetera. So, you know, if he ends up deciding to leave, like I think he will, it is what it is. But if he does come back, then, you know, it's more depth for you. As far as Quincy goes, I'm going to buy that he's going to come back. Because if he comes back, he's starting. He knows that. He's going to start at the four and, you know, or potentially the three, depending on how the roster shapes out. But he's going to play. He's going to play a lot of minutes. We know Jim Boeheim thinks very highly of his talent. And I just don't see any way that he gets feedback during the NBA draft process where he goes, yep, I need to stay in here because I know that I'm going to have a shot. I don't see any way that he gets feedback that says even, yes, you're a potential second round pick. I think they're all going to tell him, you're going to be borderline a priority free agent. And I'm not even sure that you're a priority free agent. So I think he's got a very uphill climb to getting a legitimate shot at the NBA for next season. So I've said all along, I think he'll end up coming back. So I'm going to stick with that until he proves me wrong.
Okay. Well, I tend to agree with you. I think that Quincy's coming back. And I say he comes back and he learns how to finish up around the rim too. I think he improves drastically. And I don't think they both come back. So I'm with you. Quincy comes back. I'm going to sell Griffin, even though the body language of Griffin told me that things were on the up between him and coach during ACC through the tournament. I mean, he got yanked. What game was it? He got yanked 30 seconds into the game. He took a bad shot and he was gone and he seemed receptive. Look, I don't know. Maybe like you said, he's waiting for the right move, but a talented player. When he was good, he was really good, but the last quarter of the season was a little rough for Alan Griffin. I'm not sure what happened. If he's just trying to prove himself and you know, getting recognized. I felt kind of like that to me. I don't know, but I agree with you. It's just, I think, a matter of time before we hear that news. Joe.
I am going to buy both.
Really?
It's the only reason. Yeah. Okay. I don't know why.
Oh, I mean, I like this.
I don't want to follow suit.
No, I hear you. Okay.
Both did the same thing. So, but I thought that Alan Griffin was going to end the transfer portal way sooner than, like, now we're still sitting here thinking about it, right? And I don't know what it has to do. I think Sidibe, if he never got hurt, Alan Griffin never would have saw the minutes to even sniff all ACC, honorable mention. And I don't know. I don't know if he just doesn't want to transfer again because he just transferred. But just because it's taken so long and because you guys both said the same thing and I don't want to follow suit, I'm just going to say buy both.
You know, okay.
Maybe he comes back as a two-guard off the bench, doesn't play the wing because the wing obviously definitely,
heavy,
like what Mike said, did not suit him at all. So maybe, you know, coming off the bench, being a sub for Buddy and playing the top of the 2-3 zone, and after Buddy graduates, then it'll be his time. But who knows?
That would be a deep roster, man. If both of those guys come back,
I know it would.
Front court, you add Jimmy Boeheim to that,
it would be ridiculous.
I'm glad I don't have to worry about minute distribution because I don't know how you figure that out.
He would have to do something different.
He was, yeah. And I think your option of moving Griffin up to the backcourt might be what he does there. because keeping all those guys in the front court, you'd basically be having five guys you got to find minutes for, and it's hard to justify not playing any one of them. Tough.
Yeah. All right, we'll get the rest of our thoughts on the guys coming in and the rest of your buy-seller holds after this.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
All right, the title sponsor for Sports Drink, formerly known as Armchair, is BetOnline. That's the title sponsor for this show, the Cuse Militia. It's that time of year again, and all the eyes are on pro basketball, and obviously the MLB season has begun and is in full swing right now. BetOnline.ag has all of the betting action. Actually, Joe, the read says pro basketball, and I was very happy. And here we go. In the NBA, the conference races are heating up as teams prepare to make the run for the playoffs. And if baseball is your first love, BetOnline has you covered. If you love hockey, golf, MMA, and championship boxing, BetOnline has it all. Every sport, every game, every matchup, BetOnline has you covered for all odds and real-time updates, and is the place to B, for all your sports betting needs, BetOnline is the fastest, easiest way to place your bet and check on all of your favorite sports bets all the time. Head over to the website, use your mobile device, and sign up today with BetOnline, betonline.ag. Thank you. Canaan Sunglasses, welcome aboard. Welcome aboard Canaan Sunglasses. Your outdoor experience could be better, clearly better. Look, the sun's out. It's about to be, I got the island music rolling. You know, the reggae instrumental, you got to have some cool sunglasses on. Canaan sunglasses are made exclusively with polarized lenses for optimal clarity using Japanese optics. Canaan's lenses are clearer, lighter, and stronger than other lenses and are nearly impossible to scratch with frames handcrafted in Italy. Canon sunglasses elevate your experiences outside with a degree of clarity beyond your wildest imagination. Use the exclusive code KanonCast15. That's K-A-E-N-O-N Cast, C-A-S-T, 15 at Canon.com to receive 15% off of your first pair. That's KanonCast15. Canon, clearly better. All right, Mike. The first commit that we got was Samir Torrence. Okay, local kid. Syracuse recruited him. Again, another one that's excited. He's coming home. He's happy to be back. A pretty scrappy guy. He likes to distribute the ball too. He's not selfish with the ball at all. Another good passer. You got Mark leaving. You got someone that's potentially going to fill the role at least of the assist end of things. What did you think?
Yeah, here's the positive part of it is you want guys that want to be at Syracuse and are passionate about playing for Syracuse. That helps. I think that helps team chemistry.
Oh, absolutely. All those things.
He's going to bring all that. So the unfortunate part is that he's going to always be compared to Kadari. And so the minute he comes in and doesn't do some of the things that Kadari does, there's going to be some criticism, and that's unfortunate. He should be viewed in his own right, not necessarily compared to what Kadari either did at Syracuse or does at Seton Hall. That's unfortunately going to happen.
Yep.
But here's the positive and why this could end up being a net gain for Syracuse, even if Torrence isn't as good as what Kadari could become. If Kadari was unhappy this past season and was going to be unhappy next year, even if he started, but was splitting time with Joe. Because even if Kadari wins a starting job, he's still splitting time with Joe. Joe's still playing a substantial amount of minutes. Mm-hmm. So if he's unhappy with that role, you've got a guy in Samir Torrence who's going to be very happy with that role. He's going to be happy playing 20 minutes a game, coming off the bench, being a spark on both ends, et cetera. He's going to be very happy with that role. He's going to be pumped to be playing in front of his family and friends and all that. So your team chemistry immediately goes up because of that, because of the happiness of a guy willing to accept that role. And then the fact that he's played with Buddy Boeheim and Joe Girard on the AAU circuit. They're all familiar with each other. They played together. He and Girard have split time before, you know, so there's all of that familiarity, I think, speaks to this being a very good pickup for Syracuse. If you had to replace a guy like Kadari, I'm not sure you could have found a better fit for the role that they're going to be playing and for the talent that he comes. He's actually, you know, there's a lot of people that get obsessed with the recruiting rankings. He was actually rated similarly or even slightly above what Kadari was as a high school prospect. He was actually supposed to be in Kadari's recruiting class, but he reclassified up a class to get to college sooner. So he's of similar age to what Kadari was. He just has an extra year of experience at the college level. So, you know, there's a lot of positives here. I think you get a 6'3 guy who's long and wants to be there and is a pass first point guard and can do some of the things like getting into the lane that Kadari could. I think it's about as good of a recovery as you could expect at that point from losing Kadari.
Yeah, but then
that helps with a coaching standpoint too.
Absolutely.
You got three guys that have already played together AAU. You know there's not going to be any problems. That's just another thing Jim doesn't have to worry about.
Yeah, and then news was almost back-to-back to just kind of ease everybody into their seats a little bit. Everybody was bouncing off the walls about Kadari. How many years of eligibility does he have, two?
Two.
Okay. So that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah, he's a good player. He's a top 100 player for a reason. And like I said, I think it's a good fit for all sides. And the other positive to this too is, you know, there's always a learning curve with learning the zone. He grew up in the area watching it, which I do think helps a little bit. But then any questions, areas where he's struggling with, he's got two guys in Buddy and Joe that he trusts, he's friends with, et cetera. They can work with him outside of normal practice to help bring him along and minimize some of that learning curve.
And you mentioned too, we'll have to see, but you know he's good enough to push Joe, either push Joe to be better, or he's just gonna, you know, there's a chance he could start over him. Is that how you still feel about that?
Yeah, I wouldn't predict that he will take the starting job from Joe, but I do think that he's talented enough that he could push it and at least make the coaching staff think about it.
Push Joe too. I mean, Joe needs to be pushed a little bit. He was pushed a little bit this year, but. you know.
Yeah, and you know, Joe going up against someone like Torrence in practice every day, who's athletic and quick and can be physical with him, and the types of things he's going to see in the ACC every game, you know, that's going to help him too. So I think this is, again, about as good of a recovery as you can have if you lose a guy like Kadari.
And I like Torrence, but then, you know, we get the news about Cole Swider, and I'm like, holy cow. What, I mean, what is going on? I'm just like, this guy is great. I mean, this guy, he can finish around the rim. He can shoot from outside. He can shoot mid range. I mean, this guy can do it all. He can do it all.
Yeah. The thing that I thought of out of high school with him is he's,
We recruited him, right? We were recruiting him, right? Yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
It was down to basically Syracuse and Villanova. Okay. They were there heavy. They recruited him about as hard as anyone in his recruiting class. He took an official visit here, had a very good relationship with the coaching staff. And again, I look at him and I keep thinking Tyler Lydon, but Tyler Lydon with, you know, potentially a little bit better handle, in terms of being able to create, and a little bit better in terms of his outside shot. And Tyler was a good outside shooter.
Yeah.
But Cole Swider is a really good outside shooter, and he's long. And, you know, some of the issues that he had at Villanova, they don't run a lot of stuff for their forwards, right, to get them open shots when they're three-point shooters. That's not what their offense is based around. And then defensively, they like to have a lot of quicker guards out on the floor because they switch on everything when teams run pick and roll action off.
Right.
And Cole wasn't the type that if you switch and he's got to pick up a guard, isn't quick enough to be able to handle that. So it put him in a lot of vulnerable positions defensively. And so that kept him from getting more minutes than what he got. So I think you bring him over to Syracuse where his offensive skill set is such that we've already seen someone with some of those same skills be very successful. And then you put him in the zone where he doesn't have to worry about those switches and being one-on-one with a guard. And I think defensively he'll get better as well because he's a better fit for playing on the back line of the zone than being put in those pick and roll situations in man-to-man.
Yeah.
Joe, what do you think?
I just think it's going to be really interesting when you look at the people that are possibly coming back. I mean, you talk about Quincy Guerrier, Bonnie Williams, Cole Swider, and then you, whether it's Jesse Edwards-Sidibe, I mean, you're talking about a defense that's going to be better next year.
It could be insane. It could be insane.
That's and really, like, it's really kind of exciting to think about, to be perfectly honest with you, because it's like almost like we're upgrading from what we had last year. And I mean,
yeah.
Again, it's going to take, I think there's going to be some, the early games, these guys are going to have to figure out the 2-3 zone. There's going to be some bumps and bruises in the road, but at the end of the day, Boeheim, when it gets to the end of the year and these guys get going, it's exciting to think about what we could have here.
Yeah. That's, and Mike, that's Syracuse basketball, right? Like it almost doesn't matter who you got there. The beginning of the season's always a little rough. The beginning of almost every game's a little rough.
So. Yeah, that's very true. And the good thing about next year, you know, part of the last couple of years that they've had issues defensively is because one of the wings has been a little bit on the smaller side, whether it's Elijah Hughes or Alan Griffin, 6'5", 6'6". You're used to having 2'6", 8", 6'9" guys at both wing spots.
Yep.
Now you've got Cole Swider, Benny Williams, potentially Quincy Guerrier back. Jimmy Boeheim Jr. potentially, yep. You know, your back line is now all 6'8", 6'9" guys. And that's when Syracuse has had its best zones. Yes, of course you want that length up at the top, but you also need that length on the wings. And so having a vulnerable spot on one of the wings defensively has hurt Syracuse. I know that the guards get a lot of the blame, but there's some blame there as well. You know, so bringing in those guys that have that length and have that talent, I think defense has the potential to be much better next season, especially if Sidibe can stay healthy.
Oh yeah, and it takes away from those offensive rebounds too. I mean, that's
killing
us the past couple of years.
I don't remember the rebounding thing used to be a problem until like
not like
past 4 years, 5 years, right? I mean. Yeah. So, in which we talk like every game, we're like, well, what can we do? Well, we need to rebound better. I mean, that's like the number one go-to.
The past couple of years, you could look at the box score, look at the rebounds, and it almost tells you who wins or not.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So Sidibe's coming back, and when Sidibe finished the 1920 campaign. He was
1920.
That 2019-2020.
Oh, okay.
No, he's not that old. He's been around a while. He ain't been around that long. You know, with the game against UNC that got canceled and we went through all of the COVID, everything that shut everything down, Sidibe was playing his best basketball. Coming into the season, we thought, man, you know, if Sidibe can even remotely pick up close to where he left off, this is going to be fascinating to watch this team and to watch this guy go ahead and develop. So... with that said, he's coming back. Mike, are you worried about any knee issues or anything like that? I mean, obviously, it's kind of hindered his career at SU from almost the get-go.
From a team perspective, I'll say no. Here's what I'll say about Barama, and I've told buddies of mine this. We've been talking about the team throughout the season, and you know, at one point they were really struggling and lost a couple games and. Looked like NCAA tournament hopes were gone. And I stuck by this opinion. I said, if Barama Sidibe never gets hurt, plays the whole season, is 25, 30 minutes a game, whatever it is, that Syracuse was a top 25 team for most of the year.
That's
not him being a 15-13 with four blocks a game guy. That's being an average power conference center. Because Syracuse had such a massive weakness there that you had really no rim protection from the middle. You had some decent rim protection from the wings. Alan Griffin, despite his defensive issues, was a very good shot-blocking forward. Quincy Guerrier was a good shot-blocking forward, but you didn't have the guy in the middle who could make up for mistakes that other guys made defensively and could occupy space, keep guys off the boards and all those things, get you some offensive rebounds as well. So him, not only did it hurt you in the middle, but it changed everyone's role, right? Marek couldn't now be he couldn't be the point forward at the four spot. He had to play the five, and that took up a lot of his energy and effort defensively. Quincy was supposed to be the three. Now he has to slide down and be the four and be the only physically imposing figure on the inside and had to be counted on to be the number one rebounder on the team. He had to be that every single game, had to get double-digit rebounds to keep Syracuse in games. So it changed everyone's role. Instead of Alan Griffin being a guy off the bench that played 20 minutes a game and gave you an offensive spark and an athleticism spark, he had to play 30-plus minutes a game and be one of your key guys. So it changed everyone's role, and I think that had a huge impact on this team. They had to sort of figure out how to play that way because they spent all training camp, all offseason preparing to play with Barama as your starting center, and you have to adjust and completely change your playing style and several players' roles when he goes out. So I think that hurt them a lot more than people want to think, even if, you know, Barama isn't an elite, great, top-of-the-line, All-American caliber center. Just being an average center made a huge difference on that team. Him coming back next year, it doesn't concern me that the same thing could happen again because I think we saw Jesse starting to emerge at the end of last year. And so I think you're going to have more options with him going through an offseason of development, hopefully spending a lot of time at five guys and bulking up a little bit.
that'll do it too.
Frank, I think a year where he can get stronger and continue to learn in the system that he can give you 5 to 10 minutes a game potentially in the middle there. You know, if Barama gets hurt, I still think you've got better options next season than what you did last season because of those things. So the fact that you can bring him back, you know, it's a no-brainer. If he stays healthy, it's a huge plus. If he doesn't, I still think you're okay.
So
I love your perspective on this, honestly. It's the same thing that I thought. Like, you come into the season, everyone has their roles. Barama gets hurt, now you have to change roles, right? Then you have COVID. People get COVID. And then in the middle of the season, you get these reserve players that prove themselves in practice, like Jesse Edwards and the Braswells, where you change your whole rotation. When you really look back at this season, to see where we ended up is kind of miraculous, if you really think about it. I don't want to make a big, huge deal about it, but there's so many things that happened where we still ended up as a top 25 team. What we ended up 25th, right? The end of the year.
25th in the coaches poll. AP hasn't released its final poll yet. But yeah, again, as much as Boeheim gets criticized for being stubborn, and some of that is very valid, there was a ton of adjustments that had to be made this season in a variety of ways. And the fact that they still were able to make a run in the NCAA tournament, get to the Sweet 16. And I think if they had gotten a different two seed, that they might have won another game or two. I do think they would have beaten Oregon State had they figured out a way to get by Houston. We'll never know. But, you know, it tells you that he's a lot more flexible in some things than I think that he's given credit for, and a lot better at adapting to things that are unexpectedly thrown at him, as well as the team, and the players deserve a ton of credit for working through those adjustments as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we go from really not having a center for the whole year to having two pretty decent ones. Yeah. I mean, Jesse comes out and he made huge strides towards the end of the year. I mean, I was begging for Jesse, you know, in some of those games. And whereas the beginning of the year, he couldn't even hold on to a ball.
We talked about it, Sean, right? Like, you look at it, if you get the, like, normal progression from a player in the offseason, I'm completely, perfectly fine with Jesse starting. I'm comfortable with him starting.
I agree, and there's a buy-seller hold on this. So the other thing, too, is I was wondering, you know, why, you know, we're in the transfer portal. I'm like, well, we need a center. Damn it. Let's find a freaking center and be done with this. Put this behind us already. And I guess now we know why, right? That we went, they did what they did. But every day I'd be refreshing my Twitter looking for a center from verbal commits to pop up or something. So, but I'm good. I'm calmed down now and I'm happy. So,
there were centers that they had targeted school that had entered the portal. Kudus Wahab from Georgetown, Trey Mitchell from UMass. But here's the thing, right? If you even express interest in those guys, you could potentially lose Jesse and Frank or both.
Right.
Yep. And do you want to risk that for not getting a guy, and now you got to scramble just to find a body?
Right.
I don't know that the potential reward would have been worth that, considering the strides that Jesse took. Now, if Jesse played down the stretch of the season and still was showing a lot of mistakes and wasn't making any strides, then yeah, I think you got to go hard after some of those guys. But
And that's a great point, because you don't think about all that stuff. I mean, I think about it more and more because of just having to do the podcast. You just think differently about stuff. But you know, that's a good point, because you know, you don't want to break someone's pride and have them be like, well, you know what, they're looking for a center, I'm out of here, right?
Yeah, so. Because you feel, I mean, think about it in a non-sports sense, right? If you're looking at it from what you do in your career and in your job, if you don't feel appreciated, then that hurts your mental attitude and perspective and productivity towards your job.
It gives you a little chip too, right?
Look for another one.
Yeah.
So it's the same theory here, that you don't want to tell Jesse that, yeah, we understand you're coming along, but we still don't trust you.
Yeah. And like I said, to just pound it home, he proved to me that, you know, another off season, he's going to be good to go. It just needs, man, if he could put 20 pounds on, it'd be awesome. Like you said, send him and Sidibe over to Five Guys.
Seriously. Like,
seriously, I'm telling you.
There's one on campus now. There's no excuse.
There you go. Real quick, just so I feel like I get the scholarship thing, but I do have a couple questions. Mark leaving, that does not free up a scholarship, right?
No, because he would not have taken one up, because those that come back for that extra COVID year don't count against the scholarship numbers. Like Barama doesn't count against the scholarship numbers.
Right.
So Marek not coming back does not free up an extra stuff.
Okay, so you've got Kadari gone, Woody gone, John Bull gone, Robert Braswell gone. We got Quincy and Griffin technically both still up in the air. And then we got Benny, Samir, and Cole coming in. So by my count, that is... Well, I guess Quincy and Griffin could come back, but the transfer stuff seems all but done, basically. So what's
the only pending transfer out there that would impact the roster is Jimmy Jr.
Oh, yes. That's what I'm missing. Yes. So top. Like, hold on. So. We've bumped into this 20 times to this point. Top fan, Joe P on Facebook. Jimmy Boeheim will finish his NCAA career with his dad and brother at SU. Mike, buy, sell, or hold?
Yeah, I'm buying for sure.
Yeah,
I think that's an easy buy.
Yeah.
I think I don't know what his exact role is going to be. Is he going to start? Is he going to come off the bench and play 15, 20 minutes a game? You know, a lot of those things will be determined at a later date. But if you took the name Boeheim off of him, right, and you just looked at the player, he's a 6'9 guy who in the Ivy Leagues was averaging 16 points and 6 rebounds a game, you know, shooting a very high percentage, a little over 30% from three or so. He's a guy that, in a traditional transfer year outside of the portal, where you've got basically 100 teams worth of players in the portal, Jimmy Boeheim Jr. would be a top 10 transfer target for high major programs across the country. He'd be someone that teams would want to have. He's productive. He's long. He's a little bit more athletic, I think, than he's given credit for. And he can play at this level. He proved to me that he could play at the high major level with how well he's played against Syracuse in the last couple of years.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
So again, I think he makes your front court better, and we'll let the Hall of Famer figure out how to get those guys all minutes.
Is that going to be, you know, we heard all of the buddy should be on the bench stuff. You know, for the whole year, Buddy comes
nepotism.
Out. Nepotism. We saw what Buddy obviously did. Without Buddy, I mean, where the hell would we have been in the postseason? I don't have any idea. But it wouldn't have been to the Sweet 16, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
first round loss.
With Jimmy coming in, I mean, this is going to be amazing if that's the case. Just from a legacy standpoint. Because Coach is on his way out, and we think, who knows? I mean, my kids might watch Jimmy coach. My grandkids might watch Jim Boeheim coach. It's possible at this point. So, I mean, the dude is like timeless.
Not counting him out.
So, but what a just amazing situation for the Boeheim family to have that go down, and possibly a really good team as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's all the publicity that they got when,
maybe too much.
It could have been, you know, I can understand where some people would say that was a little bit too much. but at the same time, you know, it's a cool thing. It's something you don't see all the time, which is why it was of such interest nationally. And now you add the other son to that. So you've got brothers who are both the son of the head coach, and you're at a high major program. This isn't, you know, a mid major. This is a high major program. And, you've got a Hall of Fame, all time great coach there that's coaching these guys, and they're both good players. And the stuff with, you know, Buddy was only here because he was the coach's son. Gonzaga offered him, you know, the team that was undefeated in the national championship game. That coach offered him.
Yep.
Joe Girard, he's a D3 player when he was struggling. He had offers from Duke, Baylor, who won the national championship, offered Joe. Guys struggle. It happens. And I think the fact that if Buddy didn't have the Boeheim last name, I don't think that the criticism would have been as loud. It kind of comes with the territory. Here's what I'll say. I think it takes a tremendous amount of mental strength to endure what criticism was thrown at Buddy and to come out the other side of it the way he did, where he essentially was the most talked about figure in college basketball for, you know, a good week. It was an unbelievable, I'd say, 5 to 6 games or so that he had at the ACC tournament into the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
And now you add Jimmy to that, who's a good player. It's a cool story. And if you're appreciative of what Jim Boeheim, the coach, has done here over his 45 years without ever having a losing season, they're not going to have a losing season next year. You know, it should be viewed as just a really cool thing, as really all it should be.
Yeah, exactly. So,
no, I, as far as Jimmy goes, because it was a buy-seller hold, right? I mean,
oh, yes, it was. Yeah, I bought. Mike bought. What are you doing?
I wish I knew this kid personally, so I could kind of, you know, figure it out. Because I don't know what he thinks as far as what his career is going to be. Because I feel like he is good enough to probably have a career overseas, probably make some money. But I also don't know, and Mike, maybe you do, but I mean, what kind of offers has it been publicized as far as any other teams, as far as Power Five? No, I mean,
no, that's my thing. There hasn't been any publicity about any other schools that have offered him, and part of that could be because everyone assumes that he's
Well, and that's but you have to assume that he's not going to start. He knows he's not going to start, most likely, right? I mean,
I would have to assume that at a minimum, the conversation has been, you know, hey, if you prove in practice you are the best player, you're going to start.
Well, yeah, but that's fair.
But you have to be prepared for the scenario where you're not.
Okay. I just see a situation where if we have Swider and Benny and Quincy comes back and then we get him, that's a log jam. And like you said, that's a different problem that we don't have to worry about. That's somebody else's problem. But
I mean, Quincy,
that's a log jam. So,
yeah.
I mean, if he gets a situation in another Power Five team where they're like, hey, you can come and you can start, and he has aspirations to, you know, further his basketball career, I can see a situation where he can do that. So that's going to be tough.
Or Jim Boeheim goes 10 deep. You're going to buy too.
I'm being devil's advocate. I'm going to buy.
And I get that argument.
It's going to be true because next year is going to be a special year.
Yeah, I get that argument, Joe. I guess it's just some of these buy-seller holds, I go off emotion. I'm an emotional guy anyway, so that's usually where I come from. So, all right, let's finish this up with some buy-seller holds. Oh, real quick, on the scholarship situation, we currently have, with what we got, Mike, just give me a number if you can think of it off the top of your head. If Quincy and Griffin stay, if Griffin stays, because that's the only one that would affect it, right?
Right.
So we would have what? I got, let's see.
You've got
one extra
Joe Buddy, and Samir, right? So that's three in the backcourt.
Yep.
Your centers, since Barama doesn't count, are going to be Jesse and Frank. So that's five. You've got Chaz Owens, who you can't forget about because he's on scholarship. So that's six. Yep.
He's coming back. That came out today.
Right.
Not a surprise.
Honestly, why wouldn't he? I mean, he really didn't even have a mid-major offer out of high school than Syracuse. So that gives you six, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then front court, you've got Benny, Cole. If you add Jimmy, so now you're up to nine. Who am I forgetting?
Well, Cole, well, Swider. Did you say Cole?
No, you said Cole.
Cole, Benny,
Griffin.
You have Griffin and Quincy. That puts you up to 11.
Yeah, okay, so two.
We're still good.
Yeah.
So you could potentially add another player, too, if you wanted. I don't think they would. The only potential option I could see is if they decided to add a fourth guard, someone out of high school or something like that, that's, you know, more of a project four-year guy just to give them some depth in the backcourt. I still don't see that happening. I think that they'd be more likely to have Griffin play a little bit more guard in that scenario. And they hold those scholarships for the 22 recruiting class.
All right, Zach M. on Facebook, buy, sell, or hold. Mike, Jesse Edwards will start over Brahma Sidibe.
Whew, that's a good one. Man. I'm going to buy it.
Really?
My gut is saying sell it because, you know, do I see Boeheim legitimately starting him over Brahma? But, you know, if Jesse makes the kind of strides that I think he's got the potential to make, then it should be obvious in practice that he's the better player right now. And depending on where Barama is health-wise, he might not be able to play 30-plus minutes a game. And so the fact that his knees might still cause a little bit of an issue for him, that could help Jesse as well. So I'll go out on a limb and I'll say bye.
Okay. Joe?
I'm going to say sell based on the first game of the season. So you know, he's coming back. He's going to be healthy, and he's going to play as much as he can play. And his knees, it's just like a couple years ago, he could only play what his knees allowed him to play. And I wouldn't be surprised if Jesse plays more minutes, but I think Brahm is going to start.
I'm going to sell for the simple fact that Sidibe's even coming back. I mean, I feel like if he couldn't come back and start, I don't think he would be. In other words, you know, but he's a smart dude. I don't know. Is he getting a graduate degree? I have no idea. So
I don't know that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe it's an academic thing more than it is a basketball thing. But I would say that Sidibe starts. So, all right, top fan Jesse on Facebook. He had a bunch, but we'll do this one. Buy, sell, or hold, Mike. Benny will be a... Well, let's start with Joe this time. Joe. Benny will be a one and done.
I'm buy.
Buy. Okay.
I'm buying. Sorry.
I mean, these guys I don't think hang around too long. I'm going to buy too. Mike?
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot as well. It could partially depend on who comes back and how many minutes you get, but... Here's the other side of that. Even if you don't get a ton of minutes, if Syracuse has a deep front court and he just plays a little bit, you know, he plays 20 minutes a game but flashes quite a bit while he plays in those 20 minutes, he's still going to get drafted. So just for the sake of being different, since you guys both bought, I'll sell it. But I'm very much on the fence there. But, it wouldn't be stunning if he ended up coming back for a second year. But I think there's virtually no chance outside of him being a complete bust that he sticks around for more than two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, I mean, he does have in here. His full question was Benny will be a one and done or transfer. So, I mean, I don't know if he's going to lack minutes though. It's tough. That's why this is fun. Cause we can look back on this and realize either
he's got some skills yeah. at his size that even Quincy doesn't have right now. And he's testing the waters. So
right.
He's there's some things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Buy, sell, or hold. I got two more. I'm going to end on a football one. Buy, sell, or hold. Kadari. This is Alex on Facebook, by the way. Buy, sell, or hold. Kadari won't make the NCAA tournament at Seton Hall.
I'm going to buy that because I don't believe much in Seton Hall. The last time they took a Syracuse transfer, that didn't go too well for that guy. Mr. Torian Thompson. Now, Kadari is obviously a much better player, much more stable family around him than Torian did. That could be a whole podcast on itself with what went on there. But Kadari's in a better spot. He'll go and he'll play well there. But, you know, I'm going to sell because I think Seton Hall is going to be a bubble team, kind of similar to what they were this year. And we'll see if they're able to pull it out. But I just, you know, I don't put a ton of faith into their coaching staff. They haven't had a ton of success while they've been there. They've been an okay team, but haven't been anything consistently of above average quality, we'll say.
Yeah.
They were okay the year, not this past season, but the season before, right? They were pretty
decent. Yeah, they were okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were a decent team. They were a tournament team.
James Zuba, season ticket holder. So that's the only reason I know that, by the way. So, James out in New York City now, and not holding those season tickets anymore. I'm gonna buy just because. I mean, look, Kadari wants to showcase himself, and this doesn't have to do with. I'm not saying he's gonna tank the team, but Kadari's in this for Kadari right now. I think Kadari might play 1 year there and test the waters, and you know that's just how I feel about it. I don't know if that's even on his radar. Obviously, you know, he's going back home. He's going to play close to home, and he wants to showcase his stuff and get into the NBA. That's it. That doesn't always work out great for the team. That's just my opinion. Joe?
I'm pretty much right there with you, but I'm going to sell. I don't think they're going to make the tournament, but I do think that Kadari is going to have probably a good enough year. I think he went to a team that is – guaranteeing to start him, guaranteeing to give him the minutes and the things that he wants, and they might not make the NCAA tournament, but I think that he will go pro after next year.
Yeah, and look, I didn't Kadari, obviously a huge talent, and we loved watching him. He was amazing coming in as a freshman and doing what he did. So I mean, good luck to them. Good luck to Seton Hall. See what they can do.
Here's a possible scenario for you. Seton Hall is a bubble team. They end up a 12 seed. Syracuse has a good season. Syracuse is a 5.
There you go. Now, that's a prediction right there.
Stop that.
I don't know how that bodes. I don't know how well.
Too soon.
Yeah. All right. Last one. This is our football one. Joe loves this one. Yep. I know which way he's going to go with this. Mike, I want to basically get your thoughts on this. Garrett Trader will start over Tommy DeVito.
Bye. That's a complete bye for me. I don't believe Garrett Schrader comes in unless he believes he's going to win the job. I think he gives you a different skill set with his ability to run the ball and make plays with his legs and extend plays, even if he does throw the ball downfield. Tommy had every opportunity, I think, to put a stranglehold on that job. He's been put into a little bit of a tough situation with the way the offensive line has been. He has continued to get up, and even though he's been hit over and over again, you have to give him credit for being tough in some of that. But, I think Garrett Schrader comes in and wins the job. That's just kind of the gut feeling I've had since he committed, is that he's going to end up being the guy.
I feel the same way. I feel the same way because Joe just convinced me of it. So,
because I felt the same way as Mike.
Yeah, exactly.
When I watched his true freshman tape from Mississippi State, I was like, I didn't want to compare him to Eric Dungy, but you did. I said that's more of like the type of quarterback that we need in our offense, and it just got to a point where, I mean, maybe it's the offensive line. You know, we got to commit today that hopefully might help shore that, and we got a whole bunch of people coming back, but. Still kind of out there, chicken or the egg. Is it Tommy or is it the offensive line? But, Schrader definitely brings a different type of game. And I liked what I saw from his tape in Mississippi State. And I'm going to stick to it. Like, I think he's going to start. I think Tommy's a good backup. But
it's nothing against Tommy. And when was the last time we even had a decent backup? Really? It's been a minute, too.
Well, Dungy was supposed to be a decent backup, and then Terrell Hunt went down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Dungy never gave the job back.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see. That's going to be the most interesting thing to me as far as football season goes. Quickly, look, Mike, would you be willing to come back on to do some football stuff the closer that gets?
Of course.
That's awesome. All right. Well, we're going to hold you to that. But real quick, knowing what we know.
By the way, Mike, Sean hates football stuff.
No, hold on. Time out. That's not a fair statement, Joe.
No, you're out of timeout.
No. I have a hard time keeping up with the football recruiting stuff because it seems like a lot of 3-star offensive linemen a lot of times, first of all. Second of all, it's hard to keep up because it just never stops. So if it's like Mike, it's your job. So you are on top of this stuff. When I get home and I'm like relaxing, trying to get on Twitter and trying to remember all these football recruits or commits that we're going through, it's tough, man. I got to write them all down. I have no idea. And then we don't even get to relax for the summer. There's something going on every week. So, a break once in a while would be nice, but that's fine.
Here's the good news for you on the offensive line standpoint. They signed a 4-star offensive lineman this past recruiting class.
There we go. Yeah. We did talk about that. What is his name?
They went all in on the offensive line this offseason.
Yeah, they got 5 freshmen coming in, and then they got the transfer from Texas.
Yeah. So. Well,
plus Blake coming in, who we haven't even seen yet.
Yes.
All the starters from last year. I mean, if there's going to – that can't be an excuse this year.
No, there's enough bodies there that, and if you have another year where you've got 5, 6, 7 guys hurt again, then there's something else going on.
And this should be
exactly
right. And this should be a very fair, QB comparison between the two guys. If they've got a solid offensive line and there's no excuse, it comes down to skill. So,
yep. Blake should have played last year, but
I was going to say that. Yes.
Ridiculous.
And Mike, here's the other thing about Mike that I love, by the way. Here's the other thing I like about Mike. You say all the things I think about refs on Twitter that I keep to myself.
I hate officials, and anyone who follows me on Twitter can tell you that. It's not so much that I actually hate officials or that I don't excuse them being human beings and making mistakes. I get all of that.
Right.
My problem is, one, the lack of transparency with the fact that you supposedly have this grading system, but you don't allow anyone to ever see it. And yet it's the same officials that continue to make bad calls that get put into the biggest games. TV Teddy, for example. You know, if you have to, on an out-of-bounds play,
COVID stopped.
In the middle of the first half, you have to wind up and sprint to midcourt and make this huge gesture to point to one team as the ball. I'm sorry, I don't care if that's the right call or not. You're a clown. You should not be officiating. Like, calm down. No one's there to watch you. But anyway, but it's the lack of transparency. It's the lack of when officials make really, really bad calls. CJ Fair was, it was not a charge against Duke. That was block. Mm-hmm. You know, who's Brandon Trish against Michigan in the Final Four? Block,
that one was tough.
You know, those type of errors. We saw one in a couple in the women's NCAA tournament where there were games that there were plays at the end of games where there were clear fouls that were not called. And those are bad officiating mistakes, right? Instead of there being a accountability of any kind, it's a, if you say that the officials were bad, now you're whining and making excuses. Well, no, right. You can say a team played bad, but said the officials were also bad. And if you're able to criticize teenagers, 19-year-old, 20-year-old kids who aren't being paid to play the game, then you should be able to criticize 50-year-old refs who are paid to be there, who make significant mistakes that impact the outcome of the game.
And I hate this one. We're like, oh, stop blaming the refs for losing the game. Well, that can I criticize refs without blaming them for losing a game?
Well, Sean, you have a conspiracy, bro.
What's my conspiracy?
Your conspiracy is that the ACC is against Syracuse.
Yes. I don't know if I don't. Yes.
Here's my thing with that. Right. I don't think that they're necessarily against Syracuse as much as they are pro the traditional ACC schools.
Okay, fair enough. I'll take that.
Because there's been a whole bunch of bad calls against Florida State. I'll tell you that.
Well,
football wise,
that really. Well, I was going to say this started for me with Syracuse in football. I mean, you know. I just think mostly back to Dungy. Dungy used to get hammered. He used to get hammered. Dude couldn't buy a call.
Yeah.
Right?
He couldn't.
So, I mean, come
but
on.
But if it was Jameis Winston,
oh,
flags. All over the field.
Yeah. So, anyway.
And that bleeds into the NFL. Watch Tom Brady. You know, he gets greased on, and it's a penalty. You have guys like, you know, even though I'm not necessarily a huge fan, but Cam Newton will get blown up and nothing is called. Donovan McNabb used to have that same issue. He didn't get roughing the passer calls.
It's the mobile like, guys, right?
Yeah. They're like, well, you want to run around? All right, well, then you can take the hit. Okay, right. Well, so it's my fault that I'm more athletic than that guy is?
Yeah.
Okay.
We should still get the same calls.
It's like that dude just jumped up and kneed that deep defensive back in his chin. So as soon as he gets roughing the pass, we're not going to call that because he just did that.
Just gave a flying knee drop.
Guy in the face.
Exactly. Yeah. He can take that sack. He's fine.
Yeah. I'll tell you my biggest pet peeve with officiating, though, is the, well, it's at the end of the game, so you need to let them play because you don't want to decide the game. Well, not calling a foul that is a foul, not calling a travel that is a travel, is deciding the game.
And for me, just for the record, with the officials, and I've stuck to this ever since I've started complaining about it, is the consistency. Like,
yes,
call the game at the end of it like you do at the beginning, and call it like you do for one end of the court, the same for the other end of the court. As long as it's the same, and the guys and the athletes know what to expect, where the line in the sand is, then fine.
Yeah, if you want to call a tight game where you're calling a lot of ticky-tack stuff, but you call it the same way the whole game,
at least they know.
It's up to the players to adjust to that. Yeah. If you want to call it very loose, where you're going to let teams be very physical with each other, it's up to the players to adjust to that.
Exactly.
But don't call it ticky-tack one possession, loose the next possession, change how you're calling it each half, or
Towards the end, you
get a guy in foul trouble, then as soon as he gets in foul trouble, now you're changing it so none of the stuff that he did to get in foul trouble are fouls anymore. That's the stuff that boggles.
Allow them to adjust in a fair situation. Yeah.
Yes. Like if you and you know the West Virginia game is kind of, even though, you know, the officiating wasn't necessarily ridiculously egregious, but just as an example, how physical the West Virginia guards were with the Syracuse guards with the grabbing and hand checking and all of that type of stuff. You allow all of that to happen, and yet when someone goes inside and barely gets breathed on, that's a foul.
Yep.
That's
it. And our guards don't play like that because of the defense that we play. So a lot of times that's where that whole thing comes in. You get these teams like West Virginia that comes in and hand checks every time you come down, but we don't play like that.
Right. So, and that's their defense in your face. And yeah, it's annoying.
But you got to call that.
I thought it was two hands. One hand was okay, right? And it's two hands, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you're going to allow them to get away with that, okay, let them get away with it for the whole game, then Syracuse has to adjust to it. But then if West Virginia then goes inside, don't call something ticky-tack on a shot. That's fine.
This is as well another podcast. We could go.
Oh, yeah. Get into anticipation calls, being out of position, staring right at things and still getting it wrong and needing replay and then still getting it wrong. I mean, there are so many angles to the officiating complaining that we could do.
But you keep it up, dude. You do you, Mike, okay?
It's not going to stop, like it or not.
No. All right. That's what I like to hear.
All right, we will get Mike back. I'm going to hold him to it. We're going to get him back for some football stuff. Mike, I want to thank you a ton for coming on. We really appreciate it. Thanks to Kanan Sunglasses, Bet Online. For Joe, thank you to all of you for hanging out with us, by the way. For Joe, I'm Sean. We're out.
Peace.